It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can move me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the section. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
That song never gets old, y'all. That song never gets old. Shout out my man Scheme in Cleveland, Ohio, again for blessing the preseason podcast of the year with that great record. That check, goal ain't have a net. I love that stuff, man. Welcome, y'all. It's preseason podcast of the year again. Hip Hop Sports Support is back. Today is October the 24th of 2016, Fall Classic Eve. We don't do a lot of baseball talk on Hip Hop Sports Support. We need to do more, and I apologize for that. But given the circumstances this year, there was no way that we could ignore what's happening and what's transpiring in the world of Major League Baseball. And so we're going to talk a little World Series tonight, y'all. So I appreciate y'all for listening. And again, my name is Jay Hicks on the mic as usual. Want to shout out the website again. It's hiphopsportsupport.com. Go ahead and check us out. We appreciate all of our readers there. Check out our NBA preview. Myself, Anthony Houston, Kenneth Hicks, we're busting it on the NBA preview tip. You're going to get all of our picks for the upcoming NBA season. And we already got some stuff out there already at this point. So go ahead and check that out. Anthony's written about the Minnesota Timberwolves. I did a profile on the world champion Cavaliers. Kenny's doing a little profile on the Knicks. And we're going to do another profile. I got one coming on the Golden State Warriors, of course, because they're the team that everybody's talking about. So we're going to do that. So please check that out on the website. And also you can hit us on social media, of course, facebook.com/HHS Report. The same is the handle for Twitter, twitter.com/HHS Report. We're also on iTunes, of course, and Stitcher Radio. So go ahead and check out the podcast there if you have not done so already. I don't know what the hell is wrong with you if you haven't yet, but, you know, I appreciate you doing that and then telling all your friends about it so we can really get this thing off the ground. This is a movement, this Hip Hop Sports Support thing, so we can't do it without y'all, though, of course. So thanks for everything that you guys do. You guys motivate me to do this, man, so I appreciate it. If you have any feedback for me, hit me on Twitter, hit me on Facebook, hit me on iTunes and let me know, drop a comment or whatever, and we'll get back to you, man. So I want to bring on two guests this evening. Both of them, to my knowledge, are lifelong Chicago Cubs fans. Now, to give you guys a little bit of background, you know, you all know that I'm from Cleveland, and I've been a baseball fan. I've been following baseball for a little over 20 years. I've been a Cleveland Indians fan for that entire time. And so, given the fact that I now live in Illinois, I make my residence in the state of Illinois, and I am surrounded by Cubs fans constantly, so much so, in fact, that I'm convinced that the White Sox do not have a fan base. They don't exist. White Sox fans don't exist. It's a myth. I'm certain of it because it's nothing but Cubs fans. From the moment I moved to this area, it's been nothing but Cubs. And I went to grad school in Indiana and met the two gentlemen who's going to be on the podcast tonight. Batting leadoff is my man, Joe Huber. I call him Hubris because the first time I met you, Joe, the very first time I met you was in grad school and in Indiana, and you proceeded to grill me about the Cavs and more specifically my disdain for LeBron James. Do you remember that?
Not really, but I want to correct one thing real quick.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan. Died in the wool.
Lifelong Red Sox fan?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you liked the Cubs, too.
No, I'm rooting for them this year because they got Theo, but I'm...
That makes this even more interesting because we beat the hell out of y'all in the first round, so that's great.
Yeah, that wasn't my favorite thing. But that was a quick sweep. And now you guys are four games away from hoisting a trophy we had in 2013, so...
Yeah. Well, see, you know what it was that... So you live either in or near Wrigleyville, right?
Yeah, I'm like a mile away.
Okay, you're like a mile away. And so the last time we saw each other... we were together. We were in Wrigleyville, and you kind of took me around, showed me the ropes, showed me the scene, and it's a really fun community for people that have not been to Wrigleyville. I didn't even know Wrigleyville was a thing. I thought that Wrigley Field was just named Wrigley Field, or is that the chewing gum people? Like I didn't know that Wrigleyville was the name of the community in which the stadium resides. And so, or the ballpark, I should say, for all you baseball purists. So, but the ballpark, though, it's like, imagine it's just a normal neighborhood, and just on the corner, there's just a baseball park, like for a major league team. Like where I come from, all the stadiums are downtown, you know, but this is a lot different. So, I guess the first question I want to ask, though, in spite of the fact that you're not a Cubs fan, and we can come back to the Red Sox, but I want to get your take because were you there on Saturday night when the Cubs clinched the pennant?
No, I was in Indianapolis. We're right now, my fiance and I are kind of avoiding the area a little bit. And most of that is because, yeah, I'm rooting for the Cubs over the Cleveland baseball team. And I'm not opposed to them either because they got Terry Francona. But the whole thing is just so crazy. Like, we get fireworks exploding when they won the NLDS, and we saw all of the stuff on Saturday night on TV. We saw them talking about it, and we went out. We were bar hopping, and we went to two different bars, and it had been 2 hours, and we saw the people were still stumbling around Wrigley. And all of my friends that live in the neighborhood are talking about how it's filtering this far north even. So it's pretty crazy to see not only what they've done, but how the people are celebrating already.
Is the charm gone already? Like, is it at the point where it's just like annoying? And it's like, okay, I know all you guys aren't for real Cubs fans. Like, a lot of y'all are on the bandwagon. Like, is it that at that point already?
I mean, it's the Cubs are one of those teams where people bandwagoned when they were losing and kind of latched onto that because really and truly, Wrigley Field has just that, like, an air around it. If you've ever gone to a game there, one, it's old. They're updating it now. I haven't gone to a game this season, so I haven't actually seen most of the renovations. But they are, like, it's an old stadium, and it's just got so much history to the point where you look at it and you think to yourself, man, this is kind of cool. And what's coming out of that stadium is all of these people that have been fans now and transformed into fans their whole lives to the point where it's really, the bandwagon is almost unnoticeable.
So you mean like people go there just because it's almost like a historical monument or like a landmark of place to go, and then they come out of that place Cubs fans because they're just transformed by the environment.
You're right. I think that's happening a lot with a lot of the fans that are out there that are talking today that we hear about that are Cubs fans.
But it's not to the point yet where you're like annoyed by it, where it's like, okay, like enough.
Like,
you guys are just drunken people just in the way. I'm trying to get to my apartment. Stop. Like, is it at that point?
I'm more annoyed that John Lester is a Cub, and probably more annoyed by that than I am the people. But really and truly, the traffic has been minimal for our specific neighborhood. But if you try to go down Clark Street, and I don't know if anyone out there listening is from Chicago, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When you jump on the 22 bus and you're trying to go down Clark, you can't. You have to give up going anywhere basically from as far south as Belmont to as far north as Irving Park, and east and west the same way. Just there's just seas of people for every single game. And the home games are obviously crazy. The away games are just as crazy. We went, we watched, I'm a big Packers fan. We actually went to that bar last Thursday to watch the Packers play the Bears. And we were at that bar that's in Wrigleyville, and there were more Cubs fans next door than there were probably Bears fans in the whole establishment. It's just crazy to see how many Cubs fans come out for this team.
So I wanted to touch on that, the fact that you really seemed bothered by John Lester being not only a pitcher for the Cubs, but basically their ace now. We just got word that he's going to start game one tomorrow night. So by the time you guys hear this, game one may already be going on, and Lester will be on the bump in Progressive Field, which us Clevelanders still affectionately call the Jake. And then not to mention Theo Epstein, as you pointed out, in one of the craziest angles of this entire series is the fact that Theo Epstein was the wunderkind that took the Red Sox from the cellar and from the curse of the Babe to a World Series championship. And he was there. Was he there for two of them or all three of them?
He was there for two of them, but he set up the 2013 season as well.
Okay. So he basically, we're going to credit him with all three of those championships there. And, you know, I don't know if any of you guys know about Theo Epstein, but he's only like 40 now. Like, he's a young dude, and he's basically, he's 42 years old, and he's basically, you know, single-handedly broken the curse, at least from a front office standpoint, broken the curse in Boston, which seemed unbreakable at the time. And now he's set up the Cubs in a position where they can do the same thing. But then on the other side, you have Terry Francona, who managed the Boston Red Sox to two of those championships. Is that right? Or was he there for all three?
He wasn't there in 2013. That was John Farrell.
Okay, so that was John Farrell in 2013. So the two championships in 03 and 07, I believe, or 04 and 07, Terry Francona was the manager, and he's now managing the Cleveland Indians. And so I guess your perspective is great, because as a Red Sox fan, you can tell us in depth about the breakup, so to speak, and why there seems to be some animosity still with Boston between Theo and between Francona. What happened there, and do you know of any animosity between Theo and Francona themselves against each other?
As far as I understand, and I know as a Red Sox fan, I love both of them. John Lester, yeah, I wish he stayed in Boston, but I mean, it is great to see him have success elsewhere. In terms of what they did, Theo really wanted to go build somewhere else. And when he left in 2011 to go to the Cubs, I said within 10 years, the Cubs are going to win a World Series, because that's how good this guy really is. And he does it the right way. Yeah, they go out and they get big signings, but he also builds from within. Because if you could look me straight in the eye and tell me that you knew Jake Arrieta when he was pitching with the Baltimore Orioles was this, if you can look me in the eye and say that with a straight face, come on. He sees in people, and in baseball players specifically, he sees in them exactly what they need to do, and he can give people, his managers specifically, that kind of talent. So if you look at what Terry Francona loves the strong bullpen, and he loves to have his ancillary players, but he also has to build around your ace, which, of course, they're doing that in Chicago. They're doing a lot of what they did in Boston. It's just that Boston won, so it was over with. They stopped writing that script, and then in 07 when they won again, it was almost the same team. It was so similar in what he put together. It's just that they didn't put themselves in an 03 hole. That year, though, we did we beat a certain baseball team from Cleveland 3-1 in the ALCS to get to that World Series in 07.
You did. Let me just jump in and say that not only do I remember that well, I was actually at one of those games. I went to, I want to say it was game four in Progressive Field, and I was there because, and I'm pretty certain it was game four because it was the game that the Cleveland Indians went up 3-1 on Boston, and it was like, all right, we're going to get back in the series. We were there in 95. We were there in 97. We came close but came up short. 07 is our year. 07 was like the junior varsity version of what's going on this year in Cleveland, because that was the one year that the Cleveland Browns were actually halfway decent since they've come back in 1999. So you had the Browns on one hand, and then you had the Indians doing their thing on the other hand, and you had the Cavs. The Cavs were in the NBA Finals in 2007. And then the Browns, they call it the season of dreams on Cleveland local radio, but it was Derek Anderson was the quarterback, and the Browns won 10 games, but they still didn't make the playoffs, amazingly, even though they won 10 games. That was the only good Browns team we've had since we come back. They had one other playoff team in 02, but, you know, I don't want to talk about the Browns. That's just going to bring down the entire spirit of this podcast. But so do you think that Theo and – you said you don't think there's any animosity between Theo and Tito, correct?
I haven't heard of any. I'd be kind of shocked, too, because they both – relied on each other and won two World Series together. And as far as I know, when Terry Francona was let go in 2011, and in 2012 they brought in He Who Shall Not Be Named to manage the team for a season, and then turned over the reins to an actual manager, baseball manager. But when you looked at what they did together, it's hard for me to think that they would really have any kind of real animosity or anger or resentment towards one another, because they did. They won two World Series together. So, I don't know. Also, for the record, Terry Francona is just the best.
Why do you say that?
Because look at what he did in game two of the ALCS this year. When you had no business coming out of that game and winning it, especially not the way you did, where he brings in a reliever so early and just mows people down. And when he brought in Andrew Miller early, and he's been using Andrew Miller as a hold man, which it makes sense if you think about it. Just go after the best part of their lineup whenever you need it. Don't just use him in the ninth, because you also have, you know, you have Cody Allen and you have Brian Shaw and all those guys. He's had a solid bullpen.
I mean, the bullpen has been phenomenal. And I think I just saw breaking news that it looks like Arian Foster is retiring from football, apparently.
Yeah.
I just saw that go across the bottom of the screen. So, but again, by the time you hear this, America, it'll be old news, but I'm bringing you real-time updates from the past. But anyway, the bullpen has been outstanding. And, dude, Andrew Miller, like, I call him the Grim Reaper on Twitter. Like, it's just over. It's just over when he comes into the game. Like, let me ask you this. Do you think the Yankees could have made the playoffs if they would have kept Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman?
No. Oh, if they kept both of them, no, because they really didn't have that much of an offense, I don't think.
No, but they were
kind of pedestrian.
Well, the reason I asked is because they came on charging late in the year with all those young guys. They put together a decent run, and they ended up missing the playoffs by not that many games, considering the lack of talent. You know, we would assume that was there, but when you consider that they traded away these two guys that are just electric, it's like, could they have made a run? I don't know.
Well, once Andrew Miller's another former Red Sox, but if you look at what they did earlier in the season with both of these guys on the roster, I mean, right, like, they're not, it's not, to me, they had them and they were doing nothing, so. If they were there, maybe they don't make the charge. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe some of the guys that they got out of it. I honestly don't. I paid so little attention to the Yankees at the end. I was so focused on the Blue Jays and the Orioles.
As I say, the Yankees are not in the playoffs. They're not in the World Series, so we don't need to spend too much time talking about them. That's just something that I wondered, though, in my head. Was like, man, like they had both of those guys in the same bullpen and traded them both away. And, you know, the Indians made a move mid-season to get Andrew Miller, and I was excited about it because of everybody saying that Miller was a great lefty and had great stuff, great slider and all that stuff. And it was exciting to hear, because the Indians don't normally go after that guy. When there's a guy out there and the Indians feel like they have a chance, they don't normally go for it. And they tried to get Jonathan Lucroy, the catcher from Milwaukee, I believe, and he turned the Indians down. So at this moment, I would like to pause the preseason podcast of the year and say, you moron, you blew it. You could have been in the World Series right now. I don't know. Maybe he had reason. Maybe I shouldn't jump on him. I'm just having fun, but maybe he had a good reason why he turned down the trade to Cleveland. But You know, he ended up accepting a trade to Texas, and they got bounced in the first round and got, I think they got swept by Toronto. So, but you know, and just as it worked out, though, like I said, the Indians move on and they march on. What has impressed you most about the Indians, and what has impressed you most about the Cubs?
For Cleveland, it's without a doubt 100%. It's the managing. It's Terry Francona, the way he can just kind of dance around it. And then outside of him, it's Corey Kluber, who can basically take your offense. And that's I think the key for Cleveland is you will really have to focus on being patient in your pitch counts, in your pitch selections, and not giving in to what they want you to do. And the thing that's impressed me most about the Cubs is the fact that these are young kids. I mean, we're talking about a very, very young team. And we're looking at their young team and their core, especially at the heart of that lineup. And you look at those guys and you see that they're being patient at the plate. You see that they're being very picky about their pitch selection. And on top of all of that, they're not going after junk pitches. It's phenomenal to see a team that capable of waiting at the plate that's that young. And they're staring at the face of the moment. And I keep reading on Twitter, everyone keeps saying, oh, they're too young to understand. But make no mistake, these kids understand exactly what they're looking at and what they're staring at in the face. They understand it. It's just that they don't care. They know it, but they don't care. Not that they're too young to not understand it. They just don't care. And I think that's what makes it so much fun to watch, because these are two fun baseball teams as well. Cleveland's a fun baseball team. Chicago's a fun baseball team. It's going to be really interesting to see who can outlast the other. And I really think that it's going to come down to whether or not the Cubs can break through the starting pitchers and break through that bullpen.
And who's to say whether or not they'll be able to do that? But when I just look at the Cubs lineup and you look at Dexter Fowler, Addison Russell, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Baez has been balling lately. I mean, you just go up and down. And then there's this report that my man Kyle Schwarber may be back in the lineup as a designated hitter for the games in Cleveland.
How crazy is that? That's awesome though for them.
It is, and it's such a huge lift. I don't know what kind of condition he'll be in, because he injured his knee very, very, very early in the season. It may have even been in spring training when he injured his knee. But he's my favorite player on the team because, for one, he can rake. And for two, he's from Ohio. And for three, when he was – I was watching a playoff game last year against the Cardinals, and he came to the plate, and he came out to Thuggish Ruggish Bone, which is obviously a Cleveland rap group, obviously. So, you know, when I put all that stuff together, I'm like, oh, this is my guy. Oh, this is my guy. And then he hits it out of the ballpark, and I'm like, okay, that's my guy. So I was hurt. I was hurt when Schwarber didn't play this year. But now I'm kind of like, well, wait a minute. Now he's coming back. Like, I'm a little nervous about that now. But like you said, it just speaks to how much young talent Theo has acquired for this team and how Joe Maddon has been able to kind of corral it. And I don't know. Maybe they are too young to know what they're doing. But a part of me still feels like maybe it'll catch up to them. When it comes to picking winners between teams in a series and stuff like that, I tend to pick or lean on the older team. The older team, the more experienced team. It's not even necessarily more experienced. It's about just being older, about having adults on the roster, like as opposed to a bunch of 22-year-olds. Like, there's something about that just counts for a little bit more. It's like they don't get as lost in the moment because they know, hey, man, I'm 33 years old. I might not ever have another shot at a World Series. As opposed to being 22 years old and it's like, hey, man, I'm going to throw caution to the wind. I'm going to give it my all. But if I don't get it, I got 19 more years of big league ball ahead of me. You know what I mean? And right. Maybe they don't think about it that way. But I feel like that could still be a factor subliminally. Does that make sense?
It does, but I don't think it's going to happen with this team. I don't think the Cubs are that. They're not the lost in the moment type. They are, especially because you – and this is what Theo Epstein does so well when he builds a team, he gets guys. Yeah, there's a lot of young guys. There are, you know, John Lester. He's won a couple World Series, two World Series. You have John Lackey, who's won. I know he went to the World Series, gosh, back in 2002 with the Angels, even. So, I mean, he's been around the block, been pitching for a while. And then you have David Ross, who is very, very vocal in terms of his leadership. And you have these elder statesmen in that clubhouse who I think are going to be able to relax them a little bit. And then you touched on Joe Maddon, who truly, truly can just get anybody in the world, I believe, to chill out. I bet you if he pulled in Donald Trump and sat him down for 15 minutes of media coaching, Trump at the next, you know, the next time you'd see him would be like, yeah, this is pretty chill, man.
That's high praise.
Because
Donald Trump's a lunatic, you know what I mean? So
I don't know.
Unhinged
is a good word. He's you know, he doesn't care about much of anything, so you know, consequences be damned. That's kind of his whole campaign approach.
Yeah.
But so if Joe Maddon is able to do that, yeah, I could see him being
pretty awesome.
Yeah. And that's what I look at when I look at the Cubs and Cleveland is very simple. It's going to come down to whether or not the Cubs can kind of outlast those pitchers, which, in all fairness, it's Toronto outlasted them and just waited them out in terms of picking pitches and then still didn't get the run. So that speaks to how good the pitching is in Cleveland.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing I think that the Indians can rely on is the fact that everybody's, like I just did a few minutes ago, gushing about the Cubs lineup. It's like, well, everybody said the same thing about the Red Sox, and everybody said the same thing about the Blue Jays, and the Indians shut them both down. And, yeah. I mean, shut them down. And the Indians have, I mean, I don't know what their ERA is as a team, but, I mean, they... I know it's got to be fantastic because they're not scoring any runs.
Yeah.
They batted under 200 in the ALCS and they still won the series in 5 games and they're 7-1 in the postseason overall. They won their last 3 games of the season going into the playoffs and now they're 7-1 in the playoffs. If you're going for the quote unquote hotter team, it would be Cleveland. But interesting though is what you said about the fact that you don't think the Cubs are going to get lost in the moment is that. That's going to be the narrative, though, if they don't win.
Yeah.
Do you think that's fair?
It's fair to a degree. If they, and I mean, it just depends on how, if they don't win, it depends on how they don't win. Cleveland pitching is under 2. Their ERA is under 2 as a team in this postseason run. And keep in mind, they're 7-1 facing the number 1 offense in the MLB in the Red Sox. And then one of the top, they got to be a top 10 offense in Toronto. And they shut them down. They made them look like, they made Boston look like they didn't know what they were doing out there to a degree. It was rough just because it was, you know, I mean, David Ortiz just ran out of October magic. You didn't have anybody out there, the young outfield trio. You didn't have, you know, Benintendi didn't do anything. JBJ didn't do anything. Mookie Betts didn't do anything. It was just kind of this quiet, into-the-night ride for Poppy. And then when they got to Toronto, basically, comes into town, and, you know, Jose Bautista loves to be brash, loves to be loud, and thank God he does, because otherwise we wouldn't have that great nickname for Andrew Miller in the circumstance.
Yeah, it was funny that... Jose Bautista, he had a lot to say in between each game. You know, first game, it's like, I think, well, what did he say? Oh, circumstances. It was circumstances that was preventing us from doing any hitting. And then after that, it was, they're starting this kid, Ryan Merritt. Oh, he's going to be shaking in his boots more than we are. And then he goes out and pitches like 4 1/3 scoreless innings. And you know, he wasn't. You know, Roger Clemens in 1987 or whatever, but he got the job done and he got them to the bullpen, and that's all you really needed from him in that moment.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
I think it's funny that, you know, I'm glad Jose Bautista is going to enjoy this World Series from the comfort of his own home because I think
that's pretty,
That's pretty appropriate given the circumstances. Give me your pick, man. I mean, I know that you're aware of the mystique of, you know, or the curse, if you will, that used to exist for the city of Cleveland as it came to their pro sports teams, and obviously you're well aware of everything that's going on with the Cubs. Kind of feels like it's Cleveland's year, though. I mean, at least that's how it feels to me, obviously. Now, granted, I'm a Cleveland guy, but when you look at the whole picture, and by the whole picture, I mean that it started back in the spring when a UFC fighter, Stipe Miocic, I think is his name, won the UFC heavyweight championship that kickstarted it. Then the Lake Erie Monsters, the American Hockey League team, that's the minor league affiliate to the Columbus Blue Jackets, they won the Calder Cup in the AHL. 2 weeks later, the Cavaliers win the NBA championship, and now 4 months later, the Indians are in the World Series. It feels like it's a Cleveland thing going on, but the Cubs are just too irresistible to pass up just in terms of the romance of the story and everything, man. So you're a little more neutral than I am. Where do you come out on this series, and how do you feel it's going to shake out?
So I think, personally, and now again, this is one of those things in baseball, you can never be right, but what I'm going to pick is I'm going to say the Cubs, and I'm going to say they do it convincingly in five games.
And why is that?
I think the way that they're set up in terms of that youth and the way that they are aggressive when they need to be, they know when to pull back in terms of pitch to selection to swing at. And then you look at, you know, the fact that they might get Kyle Schwarber, one of their buds that didn't get to be a part of this ride the whole time here, him arriving there tomorrow, regardless of whether or not he's going to make the roster, they did say that he's going to be visiting with the team on Tuesday, and he's going to be in Cleveland. Him being there, I think that gives them that lift emotionally, just lets them ride high. But I think that they got to take game one. They got to win game one for that to be a five-game series. And I think that they win it at Wrigley, game five, and my apartment burns to the ground.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen then. I think we all can agree that Cleveland could use another championship and that you could use a place to live.
So I would love a place to live.
Right. So let's hope for that outcome is not accurate and that prediction is does not come to fruition. But, I mean, I don't know. Everything that you said is true. And I mean, it could happen. I think that you've kind of touched on it a couple times. I think it's crucial that the Indians get out to a lead in these games and play from ahead and get out to a lead in the series, because that's been the formula that has worked for them throughout these playoffs. They got Terry Francona managed game one of the ALDS like his life depended on it, and I think it was the perfect move. He went all in right at the beginning, and he set the tone for the rest of the series. Like, hey, man, we're not running scared of the Red Sox. We're going to do whatever we need to do to put ourselves in position to be in control. So if we lose, it's going to be on us, because we had a lead in this series and we had a lead in each of these games. Cleveland's been scoring early in these games and then leaning on their bullpen late. That's been the formula for success. So if they're going to continue that against the Cubs, you know, I think they have to stick to that same formula. They got to figure out a way to push runs across early, manufacture them however you got to. If you got to bunt a guy over, if you got to sacrifice fly a guy over, do whatever you need to do. Get on top of Chicago early, because we all know that they can explode at any point, the Cubs can. And just ask Clayton Kershaw about that. But, you know, I just think that that's the method that Terry Francona has his team operating on. I think that's the same thing that he's going to have to do in this World Series. Joe, thank you for your time, man. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. We're going to have you on in the future, talk some more sports, talk some more baseball, because I know you wanted to be a contributor to Hip Hop Sports Report on the Baseball Tip, and so I appreciate that, and I appreciate your support, man. And shout out what you're doing right now. You have your own podcast of your own, right?
Yeah, I do voice acting. So this is it's called jphuberradio.com. So if you go to that site, jphuberradio.com, if you check that out, it's just a comedy show right now. There's the first season of the first show is out. We're working on a second season for another show, and then we have a short that just kind of airs whenever. And right now, we're working on season two of So About the After. And so there's PT6 out there right now, So About the After, coming up. And it's a lot of fun working with a couple different talented voice actors, just really getting our stuff out there and creating.
That is dope, man. I really appreciate you letting the people know where they can find your stuff. And I'll be tuning in myself. And thanks, man. We're going to be in for a wild ride for the next couple of weeks with this World Series, man. But please, all for right. the love of God, I hope you insured your apartment. Do you have renter's insurance?
We have renter's insurance.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about, my man.
Cool. Take it easy, Joe.
Take care.
Thank you, Hubris, for joining the podcast. Entertaining guy, of course. Lots of strong baseball opinions, especially about his Boston Red Sox. I don't want to mistake him for a Cubs fan again. Almost, you know what I'm saying? He might come to my front door and cut off my pinky toe or something. I don't know. That was a little crucial. But now we move right along to a guy that I know is a lifelong Chicago Cubs fan. And he recently became a father. So congratulations to you, Mr. Andy Roberts. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Hoping to join the new Father Championship Club with you here in a week or so.
Yeah, man. I told you back when your son was born, I was like, you know, man, my son came along and the Cavs won a championship like right afterwards. So just saying, you know, the Cubs, maybe that was like a couple of months ago and here we are. But that was before I knew the Cleveland Indians were going to make the World Series, too. So, you know, I don't know where that leaves us. But, you know,
my hands are
tied. What do you want me to do?
you're hopeless. You gotta support the squad.
I mean, I feel like my son has a gift, man. Like as soon as he came along, we didn't win squat for forever, and then my son comes into the world, boom, championship. You know what I'm saying? And now, boom, World Series appearance. You know, we don't get a ton of World Series appearances either. This is the third one I've ever seen from the Indians, and the first one in 19 years. So, I mean, now I know you haven't seen a Cubs appearance either, but I'm just saying, like, they don't come around all that frequently. But the first thing I wanted to do, actually, before we get into that and the Chicago Cubs is I wanted to ask you, what the hell happened to your fantasy football team, man?
I don't know.
So for background for those listening, I'm in a fantasy league with both Andy and Joe. We're all in the same fantasy league together. Joe is actually playing Andy this week. And the real-time score, as I'm reading it right now, is Joe is leading by a count of 119.4 to 38.2. Andy, I don't know how you... I could not try to get 38 points out of a lineup if I wanted to. I don't know. What's going on? Joe's still scoring on you because CJ Anderson just scored a touchdown. What the hell happened to you this year, man? I liked your team coming into the year.
I know. I was just going to say, I think I blame you because... You know, I thought Golden Tate, great, awesome. He's going to be great. No, he's been a disaster. Will Fuller, his only really good week was the week he was on my bench. I've had to scratch and claw for Cam Newton's been a disaster. Ugh, it's been
That's
awful.
What it is. You're a Panthers fan.
I got negative points out of my defense this week because I dared to start Miami. That's true. I drafted a whole bunch of Panthers guys and a bunch of Notre Dame guys, and they've all been pretty bad.
That's what it is, man. When you go all in on one team, you run this risk of something like this happening. Free fantasy tip for all you fantasy nerds out there: if you're gonna go all in on a fantasy football team, make it the Patriots. Okay, they're not gonna fall off. Okay, just make sure that the Patriots are the team you go in on, not the Panthers or not definitely not the Cleveland Browns or anybody like that. But we'll save football for another day, man. I wanted to talk to you more than any of my other friends. I wanted to talk to you about what this means to you being a Cubs fan. You know, I mean, I know what it's like as an Indians fan. And to be fair, or to be frank, rather, I've never had much sympathy for Cubs fans because of the fact that I came from Cleveland where we didn't have winners in any sport. And so you have Chicago Cubs fans. It's like, well, still got the Blackhawks. They won 3 Stanley Cups in the last few years. The Chicago Bears haven't won in a long time, but the 85 Bears are still universally recognized as probably the greatest football team ever assembled. You got Jordan in all 6 of his championships, and he still recognizes the greatest basketball player ever by most people. So it was kind of – and even if you're just a baseball fan and you love Chicago, the White Sox won 10 years ago. So I know that's like blasphemous to say out loud, you know, but I'm just saying like – I never really felt that much for Cubs fans, but you know, I was rooting for the Cubs to get to this point, and I was rooting for the Cubs to win the whole thing unless they play the Indians. So just let me know, man, what is it like for you as a Cubs fan to finally witness this? What was going through your head and your heart on Saturday night when they clinched?
It's been crazy. Saturday night was probably the first time all playoffs that I really felt confident. I didn't think all playoffs I've been waiting for, you know, Cub fan mindset, waiting for something to go wrong. And for a while, it looked like it might with games 2 and 3 when they got shut out back-to-back games. but yeah, going into game 6, I was pretty excited. I thought Kershaw had frankly been lucky to escape game 2 without any damage. You know, Javi Baez hit a ball late in that game off Kershaw that, you know, there were stat measurements. You know, they measure everything in baseball now. The stat cast or whatever said that balls like the one Javi hit on Kershaw late in that game are hits like 89% of the time and home runs 2/3 of the time. And Rizzo in that game had almost hit a home run that was 15 feet foul. And I thought they were going to take Kershaw out. And it turned out they did. They pounded on him. I think I read somewhere that it was the first time in his entire career he'd given up extra base hits in 5 innings consecutively. And from then on, of course, after that, just waiting for the outs. It's crazy because you expect something like the Cubs or the Red Sox to end in really dramatic fashion, like the Red Sox had happened with the Yankees. But I was pretty well at ease the whole night. And then, of course, the final out started to come and those emotions kick in because, you know, you're seeing something so many people never got to see.
And what was that emotion like for you? Because you knew that you got to witness something that a lot of people haven't gotten to see.
Well, it was incredible. You saw my Facebook post. You know, I was lucky enough. My 2-month-old son woke up right as the top of the 9th was starting. And I was going to wake him up anyway because, you know, even though he's never going to remember it, God knows when we're going to see it again. And I wanted him to see it even if he was never going to remember it. But he did wake up and I was able to hold him and have him watch the TV with me over the last 3 outs. And, you know, it got very, very dusty in my house when that double play ball hit because, you know, it's something that that you dream about and you never really think it's going to happen until it does. And, of course, then the emotions, like I said, they kicked in big time. And over the next 10, 20 minutes, it was alternating between dustiness and fist pumps.
What's funny is that I was just telling Hubris a minute ago, and I don't think this part got taped on the podcast, but I was just telling him that when the Cavs won the championship back in June, I basically just jumped up and like ran in my apartment to the other end of the apartment, screaming, making an involuntary noise that a grown man should not make.
And
I didn't cry, but I felt like crying, and I thought I was going to, but I didn't. But it was just shock and disbelief on my face, and all I did, my son was awake, and I just held him, and I was upset because I couldn't watch the game with my dad because my dad lives out west, and I'm living in the Midwest, so and we've been watching Cavs games together forever, so I didn't get to experience it with him. My brother did, which was great, but I didn't. But I got to hold my son when the Cavs won the championship, and I just hugged the crap out of him. It was awesome, and I believe he's a good luck charm. And so I guess knowing that this kind of does look like the year of Cleveland. I mean, by the time a lot of you hear this, game one's going to be either being played or has been played at this point, and ring night for the Cavaliers is going on across the freaking street at the queue at the same time. And opening night against the Knicks. So they're going to give the Cavs our rings, right? They're going to raise the banner to the top of the queue, and then they're going to throw out the first pitch of Game 1 of the World Series, the first time Cleveland has ever hosted Game 1 of the World Series. So is any part of you concerned? Like, how, like you were super confident in the Dodgers game in Game 6, but how confident are you in this team? I know you don't doubt the Cubs' abilities, but how confident are you going to be that they're going to overcome whatever it is that they got going against them for the last 100 plus years?
I am not at all worried about the last 100 plus years. I'm not one of those guys. You know, I've been watching this team this year, and they've been out of this world good. Stupid. I mean, they were 24-6 or whatever it was at one point. And the year of Cleveland stuff. The year of Cleveland stuff is a little, maybe a little concerning. But and I hope I'm not jinxing anything by saying this. But to be honest, I was probably more nervous going into San Fran and going into LA than this series. Some of that may be because now that the Cubs are in the World Series, they've had a season like they haven't had in many of our lifetimes, and maybe not. But I think that the Cubs are much better on paper than Cleveland. Obviously, that doesn't guarantee anything. You know, 4 out of 7 4 out of 7 anything can happen. You know, the Reds could beat the Cubs 4 out of 7 theoretically, and I think they probably did at one point. But I think the Cubs are better than Cleveland. I'm pretty confident they're going to win, but you know, baseball's baseball. Baseball's going to baseball. You know, Jason Kipnis could hit a 92 hopper through the infield in a 1-1 game and win game 2 to put the Indians up 2-0. And all of a sudden, the fact that the Cubs are better doesn't mean a whole lot. So I would say I'm pretty confident in as much as anyone can be confident in a sport where, you know, the difference between a good team and a bad team isn't that much.
So here's what my rebuttal would be to that. And even though I agree with you that the Cubs appear to be the much better team on paper, especially considering that the Indians don't have all their horses. People are overlooking the fact that they don't have Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley is probably the best player on the team, and he hasn't been right all season and will not play in the World Series. Danny Salazar is coming back, and he was a Cy Young candidate in the first half of the season, but has had arm problems the entire second half, came back briefly, I think, in September, got shelled a couple of times, went back down to the minors after another stint on the DL, hasn't been back since. So he may come back and pitch out of the bullpen, but there's not a lot of faith in that. And then Carlos Carrasco broke his wrist, I think, in September also. So, you know, the Indians have had some major injuries now. And now Joe and I did talk about Kyle Schwarber, who is my favorite Cub, actually. And the fact that Schwarber may be back as a designated hitter is major for Chicago. But my rebuttal to that would be, though, that number one, the Indians did not have the better team on paper against the Red Sox. They didn't have the better team on paper against the Blue Jays either. They weren't supposed to even win the division. The Kansas City Royals, who won the championship last year, are in the same division. And people like the Royals, people like the Tigers or what have you. The Indians weren't even supposed to win the division. They did that. They weren't supposed to wind up with home field in any of these series. They kind of messed around and did that somehow. Maybe the Red Sox maybe even gifted them a few games at the end of the year, but they managed to do it nonetheless. They shut down two offenses that were supposedly unstoppable. And so they're facing another offense that's supposedly unstoppable, but they've already done that twice before. They shut down two offenses. At least Boston, I know for sure, was more productive than Chicago was throughout the course of the season. So even though I understand that the Cubs have an amazing lineup, you know, this isn't anything new for Terry Francona. And Terry Francona is another point. The fact that even though Joe Maddon is one of the best managers in the business, they don't come much better than Joe Maddon, but I think Terry Francona is better than Joe Maddon. And Terry Francona's done it twice before. He snapped a super long curse streak before of championship futility. He seems to have a perfect hold on this baseball team. And I think the Indians are a little bit older than the Cubs are, which I don't even mean it from an experience standpoint, but I was telling Hubris a minute ago, I just think that there's something to be said for teams that are older. When you get into a situation like this, I think it just makes more sense to rely on the team that's older versus the team that's younger. And then also, you know, nobody's giving the Indians a chance. Like, you know, even you just got done saying that you were more nervous about the Giants and the Dodgers. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have felt that way. But my point is just that, you know, the Indians have been the underdog all year long, much like the Cavaliers were the underdog in the NBA Finals going against what people thought was an unbeatable Golden State team. It was not until the Cavaliers won the championship that the Indians ripped off 14 games in a row right after they won the championship. I mean, like, it sounds like silly and illogical to say that stuff matters, but it sure seemed like it mattered at the time, because as soon as the Cavs won, boom, win streak. The Indians went into first place going into the All-Star break and never looked back. And here they are now. So it's kind of, like I said, it kind of feels like it's Cleveland's year in spite of the fact that the Cubs are better on paper, which I would concede that fact. But, I mean, just looking at what they've accomplished at this point, just looking how the playoffs unfolded for the Cavaliers, just looking how it's unfolding here for the for the Indians, I mean, there's no reason for me to think that the Tribe couldn't do it again. Frankly, I think this team thrives off being the underdog, and the fact that no one's giving them a shot in Vegas, no one's giving them a shot on the talking head shows, and I think that's right where they want to be, man. I think that's the perfect spot for them. Does any of that concern you in any way, or are you just strictly looking at it like the Cubs are the better team, the Cubs should win?
Well, I would definitely agree that it's a very Clevelandish fit to finally make the World Series and be in position to win it, and only to have the story be hijacked by an even bigger story in the Cubs. That's in some sense that's a bad break. And I would definitely agree with you on the point that that Terry Francona is a huge asset to Cleveland. I am not generally one that thinks baseball managers matter a whole lot, but when they're not bad, they can matter. And I think that's part of the reason I think the Cubs were, that's part of the advantage the Cubs had against their two NL opponents, to be honest with you. Bruce Bochy is a very good manager. I think he made a couple of miscues in the series with the Cubs, most notably in Game 4. He went to every pitcher he could find to try and get outs, and I felt like that was jamming on the panic button a little too much as the Cubs were making their comeback in Game 4 of that series. But and then Dave Roberts, Dave Roberts is not a great manager, I don't think. I appreciated that he was going to Clayton Kershaw and going to Kenley Jansen and trying to go down with his horses, but I feel like he ran them into the ground a little bit. And
he was doing his best Terry Francona impression.
Yes, I would say that. But Frank, like I said, Francona is an excellent manager. I think he's definitely, at the very least, Joe Maddon's equal. I would say that cancels each other out. My biggest point of confidence with the Cubs, I think, is less the lineup, which is obviously fantastic, especially now that Anthony Rizzo and Addison Russell have figured out how to hit again, which they didn't do for the first seven games of the playoffs.
Yes.
But my biggest point of confidence with the Cubs is their pitching, actually. John Lester has been, I mean, you unfortunately saw a little bit of John Lester in his Boston days. He is a nailed postseason pitcher. He has been his entire career. He has been this playoffs, and I think he's going to be great. Kyle Hendricks just pitched an absolute gem against LA. The Cubs are only the second team in the history of baseball to face the minimum in a playoff game, and the other one was a perfect game. So that was amazing, and I think he's going to be good. Jake Arrieta has looked a little shaky. I think Cleveland's offense is navigable enough that maybe he can hopefully recapture some of that magic that he had last year and early this season. But even at his worst, Jake Arrieta has been very good. And then there's John Lackey, which is essentially a bullpen game. We don't know what to expect from Lackey. He'll be good or he'll be bad, but he won't be out there very long either way. So that would be my biggest point of confidence with the Cubs. They got great starting pitching. They got great relief pitching between Pedro Strop and Aroldis Chapman and DJ Edwards and Justin Grimm and all these arms that they got to throw out in clutch spots later in the game. So I think I think the pitching is going to be the key to the series for the Cubs, more so than the offense.
Well, what's interesting about that, too, is the flip side of the Cubs pitching is the Indians hitting. So the Cubs pitching can't be great unless the Indians pitching stinks, or excuse me, Indians hitting stinks, which it did in the Toronto series. And so there's a couple of ways you can look at it. You can say, well, the Indians didn't hit much against the Red Sox and hit even less against the Blue Jays and are still 7-1 in the postseason. So that's awesome. So if the pitching stays where it is and then the bats finally come around, then the Indians are going to roll. I think that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, well, the pitching is carrying Cleveland and they can't hit. So if they can't hit against the Blue Jays, who definitely are not known for their starting pitching prowess or any kind of pitching prowess for that matter, how are they going to handle the Cubs? And how are they going to handle Lester and Arrieta and all these guys and 110-mile-an-hour fastballs from Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning? I think all those are fair questions. What do you think is the biggest X factor for both teams in this series? I guess you already said the pitching for the Cubs. If the Indians are going to win, what do you think is the biggest X factor for them?
if the Indians win, it's going to be because Andrew Miller continued to be absolutely amazing, as he has been his entire career, frankly, but certainly in this playoffs. And if the Indians win, it's also going to be because they got hits with runners in scoring position, which has been, in particular, an area John Lester has been very good at, getting out of trouble when he gets into trouble. But as we have shown, as statisticians will tell you throughout baseball, pitching out of trouble is not something, is not a replicable skill. So it's not like John Lester can just do that every single time if he keeps playing, if he plays with fire. I shouldn't say keeps, because he hasn't been in many tough spots. But if he does get into a bad spot, he can't just count on getting out of it just because he's done it before. It's not something he can do. So I would say those are the two things. Andrew Miller being awesome, which I think we can both agree is pretty much a given, and situational clutch hitting, putting the ball in play when you need to. That's going to be huge for Cleveland.
Andrew Miller, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like him. I've never seen, like, a middle reliever be this dominant and this impactful in a series or on a season, because, you know, obviously he wasn't on the Indians when they were in spring training. You know, they traded for him in the middle of the year, which is not a Cleveland Indians type of move, not a Chris Antonetti type of move, is to go get that guy midseason, but they went and got that guy, and man, has it paid off. I mean, he's like, I was thinking the other day, like, if I had to rank the best athletes in Cleveland on major Cleveland sports teams, LeBron is first. Is Andrew Miller second? Like, he might literally be the second best athlete in Cleveland, like, behind LeBron. And then, like, is he better than Kyrie Irving? Is he better than Kevin Love? We know he's better than all the Cleveland Browns, but I mean, I think he could be the best player on the Indians right now. And I've never, like, I think the statistics were insane. Like, I think he had, he maybe pitched like 27 innings and had 20 strikeouts or something ridiculous like that, that just was completely absurd and didn't make any sense in the real world. You know, they're comparing him to Randy Johnson, so that's all you really need to know about Andrew Miller. One thing you said about Lester, too, was about his ability to kind of, you know, wiggle out of trouble. I think that's kind of what Corey Kluber's done this postseason as well, except he's actually done it a little bit better. Kluber, I don't think Kluber's ERA in the postseason, I think, is under one, which I think is actually better than Lester's has been. But it's amazing that Kluber hasn't really gotten touched up, except for the one game where he pitched on short rest. He wasn't quite as sharp as he had been previously, but he's been rock solid for the Indians. Let me ask you this. The rest factor, do you think that's going to matter at all? I know that there's a lot of statistics out there floating around saying the team that has more rest tends to lose these series more frequently, especially in recent years. So that would be the Indians. The Indians had more rest, therefore they're at a disadvantage for that reason. My counter to that would be that would concern me more if the Indians were hitting the ball like crazy. But the fact that the Indians aren't really hitting the ball, you know, it's really about their pitching. So I don't think the pitching is going to be of that much variance going into the series, even with the rest. I think, if anything, it would be the bats that would fall silent, I feel like. But do you think that that's going to matter at all? I mean, because really we're just talking about a couple of days anyway. It's different. So, I mean, maybe the Cubs have an advantage there. What do you think?
I would agree that that if there would be a side of the ball on which that would be a factor, it would probably be the bats. I don't know. I saw the same stat you did. I believe it was the last 7 World Series have been won by the team that had less rest coming into the World Series. Probably more coincidence than anything else. I mean, the Colorado Rockies had more rest coming into the 07 series against Boston, but we all know Boston was better than they were. That, you know, it didn't matter how much rest they had. So, yeah, I'd say that probably is not an issue. Like you said, both teams are here because of their pitching, and I think that's just going to continue. It's not going to be affected by the who had more rest thing. That's not a – I don't think that's a real thing. That just gives people something to talk about coming into the series.
I would tend to agree with that. And I'm excited about the national public being able to see – the young stars that are on the Indians, because we all know about the Cubs, and this is no knock on the Cubs, because those guys are great, and Addison Russell's great, and Chris Bryant is great, and all these guys are great. But I think it's pretty cool that they're going to see Francisco Lindor and they're going to see Jason Kipnis, you know? And I'm excited about it, man. I just think that this is the epic series that I think everybody wanted. You and I talked about it weeks ago. Like, man, I hope this series comes to fruition because this would be unbelievable. And I feel like, you know, obviously the bigger reason is due to the fact that the Cubs are in the World Series, but the ticket prices for these games, have you seen these ticket prices?
Oh yeah. I think the Cubs standing room only seats for game three are about $2,200 on StubHub, and the Indians are less than that, but I think that's got a lot to do with Cleveland's just not as big a town as Chicago, and their fan base is not as far reaching as Chicago. So not anything to read into, but yeah, their standing room tickets, I believe, are pushing $800. So yeah.
I mean,
needless to say, neither of us will be attending a World Series.
I didn't go to the NBA Finals game either, man, but I was at the parade. I don't know if I'll make the Indians parade, but you know what I'm saying, it's who's to say, man. It's I'm just so excited for the series just because of the history and the suffering, and this is the longest championship drought for an American League team currently is the Cleveland Indians. They haven't won it since 1948. Obviously the Cubs, it was what, 40 years before that since they've won their last world championship. So let me ask you this, what are you going to do if the Cubs win?
I don't know. No idea whatsoever.
Have you thought of that?
No, not really. I know games 4 and 5, which are in Chicago, are next weekend, and I actually plan to be in South Bend area back where I come from for that weekend. And yeah, I don't know. If the Cubs are in position to clinch that weekend, There might be this may be the last time I'm ever heard publicly.
so that only naturally leads me to the following question. What are you going to do when the Cubs lose?
See what I did there?
Same thing I've done every year of my life when the Cubs
Man, let me tell you, man, the Cubs are the one team, like I said, they're the one team that I, you know, I don't want them to win, but I would not be mad if the Chicago Cubs won it from the standpoint of their fans deserving it. I was telling Hubris, I never had a lot of sympathy for Cubs fans because I always felt like Cleveland fans had it worse because it was spread across all of our sports teams. There was enough pain to go across all of our teams versus Chicago fans. That wasn't the case. But if you had to narrow it down to one particular franchise, the Cubs have suffered mightily for a long, long time, longer than any franchise should. And it's probably, I mean, obviously from a number standpoint, no franchise has suffered more from a heartbreaking moment standpoint or crazy moment standpoint. I don't know. I would say the Cleveland Browns since 1964 have crammed a lot of suffering into a short amount of time, comparatively speaking, but regardless, the Cubs fans deserve a championship. They do. And so I'm hoping it doesn't happen this year, but maybe it does. And if it does, man, like I said, your fans are loyal. You're not the only Cubs fan I know. Living in Illinois now, I'm surrounded by Cubs fans, and they're a loyal bunch, and they really deserve to see a championship because nobody should go their entire life without seeing a championship, their team win. Like, that's just absurd. Give me a prediction, man. Give me a World Series prediction. Games, World Series MVP, winner, whatever you want to do.
Well, I'm going to take the risk. I think the Cubs will win it in 5. I think Kluber wins game 1, and then I think the Cubs win the next 4. World Series MVP, I mean, you pretty much have to say Javi Baez, don't you? The way he's played in this postseason has been out of this world on both sides of the ball. I'm going to go with him to win the World Series MVP, no matter how cool it would be to see Schwarber get that after missing the entire season with his knee injury. What else were you asking for?
Oh, no, you pretty much covered it. Hubris also had the Cubs in 5, and I told him that, you know, I would be concerned if I were you guys that everybody is on the Cubs because Vegas is a huge Cubs favorite, or the Cubs are a huge Vegas favorite, I should say. All the quote unquote experts, all those clowns at ESPN who get stuff wrong all the time, they all pick the Cubs. It seems like, you know, the Cubs are the better team on paper. Again, I agree with that, but that doesn't mean that they're going to win the series. And everybody's on the Cubs. All the pressure is going to be on the Cubs because they're expected to win. All the pressure is going to be on the Cubs because of the curse. And I think all that stuff works in the Indians' favor, man. I think the Cleveland Indians win the World Series in 7 games. I just think it's Cleveland's year, man. I think the power of Cleveland is title town now, man. Title town. What do you want me to say?
Seven games.
Seven would be amazing. I think the Cubs have been the favorites all year, and they've handled that pretty well. So I'm not too worried about
this,
that.
This is true.
But we will see.
This is true. Well, all right. So you raise a good point. So this is the last question, and then we'll bounce out. But real quick, what about this team is different though? Because they were really favorites in the eyes of many last year, and they got to the NLCS, and they got their brains beaten in. Why is this team different? If you can answer that in 45 seconds.
Well, you can look it up and read their articles all over the place about how the Cubs, how some of the Cubs refined their approach. Chris Bryant, Madison Russell sliced their strikeout rates in by remarkable sums coming into this year. So the Cubs put the ball in play better. Their pitching is better. Hendricks obviously emerged this year. Their bullpen is better. Zobrist over Castro has been a massive upgrade for the Cubs. Javi Baez got a lot better. Wilson Contreras wasn't on this team last year. He's fantastic. Even though this Cubs team only won 6 more games than the previous year's team, I think this team is far better than that one was.
There you have it, ladies and gents. Andy, thanks for joining us, man, on the podcast. Anything you want to plug right quick?
Well, yes, follow me on Twitter if you want, @Roberts_WLB, but I mostly just tweet about Michigan prep sports. So if you're really interested in that, I guess you can do that. Also have a joint Twitter account with my friend, @B_Junkie, where we riff on a lot of sports stuff. Most of it NSFW, but it can be entertaining at times.
NSFW stuff always tends to be entertaining, so
that's what I've learned.
Thanks for joining us, man. It's going to be epic, and hopefully we're still friends at the end of it. And we'll have to have you on the podcast another time, talk more about it, man. Thank you all for listening. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast signing off. Please check out the website and check us out on Twitter and Facebook @HHS Report or facebook.com/HHS Report. Subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher Radio and iTunes or Google Play, and get at us with your predictions for the World Series, man. It's going to be a memorable one. So we're out of here, man. Cleveland Indians, go ahead and bring us another title home, man. We deserve it. We deserve it. The Cubs deserve it, but we deserve it too, man. We out of here. Peace. Never make me no underdog, and never talk about who's gonna stop me. Oh, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight 12 fast enough to stop me.